Arise. Oi, oi, oi. All persons having business before the Honorable United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims, draw an eye and give your attention, for this court is now in session. God save the United States and its Honorable Court. Please be seated.
Good afternoon, I'm Judge Castle. To my right is Judge Hagel. To my left is Judge Lance. We're here today in the matter of Clemens versus Peek, docket number 070558. Would counsel for both parties please note your appearance for the record?
I'm Sandra Wisho, counsel for William Clemens, the appellant.
Thank you.
Shayla McGee for the secretary.
Yeah. And who's with you?
Oh, and co-counsel Brian Redwood, the assistant general counsel.
Thank you. Are both parties ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Each party will have 30 minutes to present their respective arguments. Ms. Wishow, do you wish to reserve a portion of your time for rebuttal?
Yes, please. I would like to reserve 10 minutes.
All right. It will be marked.
Thank you.
Proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, as I've already stated, I'm Sandra Wishow, counsel for the veteran William Clemens. Now, in its order, which is what I'll start addressing, the court indicated that what it was primarily concerned with, or particularly concerned with today, was the question of whether this court has jurisdiction to grant a JMR, which in part involves a question that was not decided by the board. And in the circumstances of this case, the answer is yes, this court does have jurisdiction. As this court recently stated in the Barringer case, the court had jurisdiction to determine whether or not the board erred in failing to evaluate whether or not the facts of that case reasonably raised a claim for extra schedule or consideration, and whether the board should have considered that. Also, in the Ingram case last year, the court went into quite a bit of detail about those very issues and talked about the entire problem of having a claim that was reasonably raised but not decided and how that ought to be dealt with. And in this case, we state that the claim, although Mr. Clemens stated his claim as one for PTSD, that the record in this case still reasonably raises the claim of whether or not he should have been considered for service connection for other acquired psychiatric disabilities. And that was the issue in the JMR that has raised the problems that we're here to discuss today.
Well, starting at ground one, do you agree that the parties cannot agree? You can agree to anything, I guess, but that just because the parties agree that there's an error in the board, that the court nevertheless has to independently find that there is, in fact, an error in the board. We can't just accept the statement of the parties that there's an error, can we?
Well, I think the court always has the authority to look at this and say, no, you know, we don't agree to that. On the other hand, I think the court certainly has jurisdiction to go ahead and grant this joint motion for remand. Because, in fact, based on the case law, I don't think there's a problem with saying that the board erred in failing to determine whether or not this other claim was reasonably raised.
Counselor, let me give you a hypothetical. Let's assume that we were to grant the JMR under its present terms and conditions. Keeping in mind that the Secretary's position starting out very early on was emphatically that this court lacked jurisdiction over the anxiety aspect of this claim.
Correct.
All right. And then let's assume that there was a remand, and let's assume that it was styled as a Stegall type remand, and the Secretary didn't do something that you thought that was part of the agreement, and then became time to enforce the agreement. Couldn't the argument be made that the court lacked jurisdiction as a result of that?
Well, I think once the Secretary has agreed to something, assuming the terms are concrete and something that the board can follow, I think the Forcier case pretty much decided that the court can then enforce the terms of that agreement. Whether or not it was something that the court ruled on in the first place, I think once the Secretary has agreed, for example, if they agreed that the board needed to consider this and the board simply said, no, we're not going to, I think that is enforceable under Stigall.
Can I jump in? I think, let me restate it a different way. If the JMR contained a matter which everyone agreed we ultimately don't have jurisdiction on, and it was just stamped, approved, and sent back and included a vacate, and at that time you didn't get the benefit of your agreement, and you came back up here and the court went out to look at it, ultimately find there's no jurisdiction, how would you enforce the benefit of your agreement?
Well, I don't think that's the case here.
I think he gave you a hypothetical. If those were the facts,
if this were something clearly beyond the jurisdiction of the court, then I guess the court wouldn't be able to. But I don't think that's the situation we have in this case.
I was just trying to add on to.
Well, if you read the Secretary's initial brief, that would indicate that we lack jurisdiction over an aspect of this case that now the Secretary and you would like to stipulate to, basically. But the underlying question remains, does that give the court jurisdiction, even though the parties might stipulate that it does? Congress hasn't signed off on a stipulation.
Well, the fact that the Secretary argued there was no jurisdiction is not dispositive. I mean, we had a position, too, and our argument was that the court did, in fact, have jurisdiction. So that's a preliminary matter that the court would have to decide. It's not simply a question that the Secretary asserted that, and therefore it's so. You know, as we indicated in both our initial brief and our reply brief, we believe the court does have jurisdiction. Based on the case law that's out there, based on VA's duty to sympathetically read the pleadings, based on the fact that it was clearly raised by the evidence. The board even talked about the fact that there were indications in the VA medical records saying that this veteran had anxiety disorder connected to his service connection. Even at the very end of the board decision, the board member says, when a November 2000 VA medical professional considered the veteran's asserted stressor, working with dead bodies, in the context of psychiatric testing, the resultant diagnosis was schizoid personality rather than PTSD, as due to working with the dead bodies. So throughout...
It's pretty obvious. Did this case go through the mediation process, or did it get sent up here before that the court has?
No, there was no mediation process in this case.
Was there a staff conference ordered?
No. This was a little bit before, I think, the routine Rule 33 conferences were being ordered.
If I can, I'd like to ask a question.
Sure.
You noted the Forcier case, yet I believe this JMR, if I'm not mistaken, had a request to incorporate it within our order. Or did I read it wrong?
I don't think it did. It had a request to
actually incorporate the claims file. You're right. Thank you.
So we didn't request that it be incorporated in the order. That's correct. So as I say, I believe this court does have jurisdiction to consider this based on, if you look at Ingram, if you look at Berenger, all of the cases seem to say that if, in fact, a claim was reasonably raised, and it's part of the claim that was being decided by the board should have considered it. Now, we're not asking this court to say, yes, you know, grant service connection here. It's a question of the board of sending it back so that the board can properly assess this. So they can say, yeah, you know, all of these things that we've talked about, the anxiety disorder, the schizoid personality, all dealing with handling bodies in Korea.
Let's turn to the claim for a while then.
Sure.
I think in your JMR you referred to it as two claims, a claim for PTSD and a claim for anxiety.
Well, the anxiety is reasonably raised.
Raised.
Yeah.
It could also be seen as just simply one claim, couldn't it? The veteran came in and claimed disability benefits, and that's what you seek from VA is benefits.
That's correct.
And he's not a doctor, and he says it's PTSD, but our case law is very clear that so he said it's PTSD, it doesn't mean anything. He's incompetent to state that type of information. So claims submitted to VA when it specifically states PTSD, when it's submitted with or the evidence that's gathered with it indicates that the person has anxiety or schizophrenia, is really, from the veteran's point of view, one claim.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And so while the JMR talks in terms of two claims, it could be just one claim. We have jurisdiction over the one claim, and then the case that you cited and submitted indicates that we have jurisdiction over those parts or aspects or claims that are reasonably raised by the facts.
Well, that's correct, because the veteran is not submitting a claim for a diagnosis. He's submitting a claim for a group of symptoms. And whether he, you know, it's PTSD is one of those things.
Actually, he's submitting a claim for benefits.
Well, that's correct. But in this case, it's benefits based on his psychological symptoms as opposed to a knee or a back or something.
Now, at the end of the day, VA can look at this. Secretary can look at this and issue opinion and say, no, you don't have PTSD, and deny it. No, you don't have anxiety, or I'm going to remand anxiety.
That's correct.
And at that point, the secretary is determined to separate them out. And our case law is very clear that nobody, you know, we have many definitions of a claim, statutory, actually I don't think statutory, but regulatory,
correct,
case law, et cetera. So in a way, we have a claim coming in at the front end that's broad, and if the secretary wants to separate them out into disabilities, he can go ahead and do that. At that time, I mean, the case law that's coming out, and you've seen some of it, would, if you had a decision on PTSD as you do here, if they had remanded the anxiety, would you be required to appeal the PTSD, or could you wait until the anxiety was decided?
As a safety precaution, I would go ahead and appeal the PTSD. I would not want to take any chances on that.
Right.
Counselor, if I may, clarification, I think, of Judge Castle's question is found on page 3 of the JMR. And your response, I think, differs from the plain language of the JMR. But the first full paragraph says, the parties agree that the appellant reasonably raised a claim of entitlement to service connection for an acquired psychiatric disorder in addition to the claim of service connection for PTSD. And the board failed to fully adjudicate these inextricably intertwined claims. Now, the language would seem to imply that we're talking about two claims. And that leaves it somewhat ambiguous, at least, I think. And I think that was the thrust of Judge Castle's question. Your response, of course, was that it was one claim. But the language seems to imply we're talking about two claims.
Well, I would agree on the one claim. On the other hand, sometimes when you are working out the terms of the JMR, you have to compromise in the interests of going ahead and resolving the claim so that your claim...
And just to clarify, I think I was proposing it as an alternative view, and I don't think counsel presented it on their own. I was just saying you could see it as two claims. Some people might, and you could see it possibly as one claim.
So if the matter were remanded by the court, not utilizing this language, your client's position would not be negatively, materially impacted?
If it were simply remanded so that all possible bases for entitlement were to be considered, I don't see that it would impact my client's position, no.
Okay. Thank you.
Because also at this stage of the game, when we went back on remand, we could more fully, you know, point this out to the board, the things that they have said and what's in the record. You know, my client was not represented by an attorney until we got to this appeal. But, of course, now if it goes back, he will have the benefit of representation to look at all of these issues and make sure that they are all pointed out to the board.
Thank you.
Now, the other feature to look at here, or the other factor to look at here, is simply the fact that, again, he cannot diagnose himself. You know, if the VA were willing to accept his diagnosis, then we wouldn't have had his PTSD claim denied on the basis there was no diagnosis. And since Mr. Clemens cannot diagnose himself as having PTSD, it hardly seems fair to turn around and say that he's now bound by PTSD as his only claim that he can pursue. He has symptoms, hey, he's had a doctor say PTSD features. That's what people hear on the news, you know, PTSD, veterans coming, suffering. It's a logical thing to put in there. But what he's really filing a claim for, as Judge Kasoff pointed out, was for service connection for his disabilities, and in this case, his psychiatric disabilities.
So you're saying your client, the appellant, wasn't seeking benefits only if he had a PTSD condition?
Exactly, exactly. And if VA had turned around and said, well, Mr. Clemens, we don't think you have PTSD, but we do think you have an anxiety disorder related to these events in service, I don't think he would then say, oh, no, you know, I won't take it if it's not PTSD. PTSD is a name, but the names vary for symptoms. We've all seen medical records where different doctors describe a group of symptoms as different ailments. And certainly this veteran is not competent to simmer it all down and pick the conclusive diagnosis that he should be held to. Now, from the court's order, it appeared that this was really the issue that the court wanted to discuss today. Are there any questions about the other issues in the case that are pretty straightforward? Well, I think I've presented my position at this point, so if the court doesn't have further questions.
I think that's a smart
questions.
Counsel.
Thank you.
If it please the court, again, my name is Shayla McGee, and I represent the Secretary of Department of Veterans Affairs, James B. Peek, and to my right is co-counsel, Deputy Assistant General Counsel Brian Ripple. The Secretary stands by the joint motion that it entered into with appellant's counsel. However, after further review, we recognize that there might be a jurisdictional issue as to the anxiety claim. The Secretary acknowledges that the court is not bound by the party's joint motion to remand and that the parties cannot waive jurisdiction. The Secretary respectfully requests that the court make a determination as to this jurisdiction, and the Secretary also respectfully requests that if the court chooses to deny the joint motion to remand in part, that instead of a line item review of the joint motion to remand, an exercise of judicial restraint, and as a matter of prudence, that the court would allow the parties an opportunity to correct or amend the joint motion to remand to address the concerns of this court. First, in addressing whether there are two claims, PTSD and anxiety are separate claims. The Secretary looks to the Federal Circuit's decision in Boggs, in which it held that properly diagnosed disease or injury cannot be considered the same factual basis as distinctly diagnosed disease or injury. In this case, we do have two claims, which are the PTSD and anxiety claims. Although they might have overlapping symptomatology, and even some diagnosis rendered anxiety with PTSD features in this case, they are still two separate claims.
Counselor, if I could interrupt.
Yes, Your Honor.
I think that's probably the heart of the issue. The Boggs case coming out of the Federal Circuit deals with examining the number of claims in a context of finality, does it not?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Now, in spite of your very generous admission at the outset, now we're kind of getting back into the heart of the issue, which is when a veteran comes in and says, look, I've got a problem. I've got a mental problem of some description, and I'm not sure what it is, or I think it's PTSD. The case law, as you're well aware, says you are incompetent to diagnose yourself. You can relate the objective symptoms, but you cannot diagnose.
Yes, sir.
Now, if we accept the premise that these are two separate claims, you're saying that we say to the veteran, you don't have PTSD, and that was your claim. Now you need to file a whole brand new claim for the anxiety side of this thing, right?
No, Your Honor, that is not what we're saying in
okay.
this case.
Maybe I misunderstood.
Oh, I'm sorry, Your Honor. What we're saying in this case is that the veteran does not have to file an anxiety claim. The claim was reasonably raised. It was just the RO's and subsequently the board's failure to recognize it and to adjudicate it.
And how do we ensure that distinction in the future for other veterans filing claims who come in and say, I've got a problem with my foot, I think it's the right toe, and I want benefits. And after examination, some physician says it's not your right toe, it's some other member of your foot. How do we ensure that, the message that we give to the veterans community is just tell the examiner what the problem is and let the professionals figure out and sort out basically what the cause of your problem is?
Well, Your Honor, we believe that the veteran's actually protected by the recently raised concept of the law, and that we understand that a veteran cannot diagnose himself, and sometimes will say, as Your Honor stated, I have a problem with my right foot, when it can be something else related to the foot. Right toe, and it's something related to the foot as a whole. So the recently raised concept is what protects the veteran, and that VA is to recognize this and to develop that claim accordingly. However, in this case, that did not happen, and which precipitated opposing counsel and I attempting to remand this claim in order to make sure that the veteran was able to have evidentiary development of this potential anxiety claim or psychiatric disorder.
Well, reading the Secretary's initial brief, that's certainly a different position than one would glean from reading that initial brief that talks about lack of jurisdiction and a variety of other things.
Yes, Your Honor.
So has this been a recently developed position by the Secretary?
Well, Your Honor, as in all cases, after submitting briefs, we always reevaluate the case, particularly before it goes into oral argument, in order to prepare. And after reevaluating this case was when I contacted opposing counsel regarding a possible remand, recognizing that there were issues. There were issues with the board decision and the adjudication, or rather the non-adjudication, of the anxiety claim. In addressing that the PTSD and anxiety claims are inextricably intertwined, the secretary turns to Joyce, which held that...
Does the secretary, you keep talking about it being inextricably intertwined of two claims. what's the secretary's view with regard to whether or not this is simply one claim? One claim for benefits associated with what the veteran believes is PTSD, but he's not a doctor, so therefore, by definition, it's some mental problem.
Well,
why is that not one claim?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that goes back to the Federal Circuit's recent holding in Boggs, which is...
Well, the Federal Circuit is talking about, as Judge Lance said, finality. Once the secretary decides at the end of the day you don't have PTSD and that's the final decision, that's now the claim that's on appeal. But at the beginning of it doesn't mean that Boggs doesn't impact the beginning of it.
Well, Your Honor, just Boggs being instructive, and also Section 7104 subsection B, which Boggs cites to in determining the factual basis for claims.
Well, that was a reopening, though.
Correct, Your Honor, but we feel that that's not a difference, because it's still addressing what constitutes a claim, or refining the definition of what a claim is. For jurisdictional purposes, and what we see is that it is a distinct diagnosis, and even if there is common symptomatology,
do we have jurisdiction over claims or board decisions?
Well, Your Honor, it is over board decisions, but the claims that fall within those board decisions. Your Honor,
and a veteran does apply for benefits, right? He doesn't apply for PTSD. Tag somewhere.
Right, Your Honor. He applies for benefits based on whatever the benefits by itself, and whatever the illness or injury is what RO needs to sort out and adjudicate.
So we have 7252. We have jurisdiction to review decisions of the Board of Veterans' Appeals.
Yes,
so
sir.
The only issue is, did the board and all questions in a matter which under Section 511A of this title or subject to decision of the Secretary, shall be subject to one review. Could it be that the Federal Circuit, which has also said that there's a sympathetic reading to be given to all the veterans' claims when submissions when he files them, that when a veteran comes in and says PTSD, And everyone knows that he's not competent to say he has PTSD, that by definition it's a claim for mental disabilities. And then as the evidence develops, it might be anxiety or schizophrenia or whatever is developed during that period. And then the secretary at the end of the day can say no to one, remand to another, underlying specific disease, for example. And that becomes the final aspect. So the PTSD, which is rendered by the board, is denied, not appealed, and somebody wants to reopen it for PTSD, they'd have to reopen it, get new material evidence. But if they wanted to file separately for anxiety, and anxiety was not one that was remanded, they would then have a new claim for anxiety. In other words, the tunnel going into it by the veteran is broad, but coming out is determined by the secretary.
Yes, Your Honor, but we still believe, as in this case, I think the heart of the matter is that an anxiety claim was reasonably raised. As we noted in the JMR and in our briefs, there were several different diagnoses ranging from anxiety, not otherwise specified, PTSD features, schizoid personality disorder, all separate diagnoses. If VA were to characterize the claim one way or another, a broad mental disorder claim, perhaps that's a separate issue. What we see from the record is what was reasonably raised. We have a PTSD issue where the veteran states he believes he has PTSD based on wartime experiences, and that's where we have the whole corroborating whether non-combat or combat and the stressors that he had. But here we have evidence of the record that has a kind of myriad of diagnoses ranging from PTSD features, PTSD, anxiety, and they are separate claims. Even if they are in the same broad category, they're still separate diagnoses.
If they're separate claims, how can they be? How do you see that they are inextricably intertwined, as you would indicate? You would have us agree to in your joint motion for remand.
Well, Your Honor, just based on the evidence, there's, as we noted in our JMR, there's even some diagnoses that have the veteran with anxiety with PTSD features. We feel like this is the most pure, inextricably intertwined case because...
If they're separate claims, as you're saying they are, the decision on one claim doesn't dictate the decision on the other. A decision on that somebody has PTSD doesn't dictate that they have have anxiety disorder, or doesn't dictate that they have schizophrenia, which, as I understand it, is the definition of inextricably intertwined.
Well, Your Honor, again, in this case, it's that... I'm sorry, Your Honor, if
there's
I can
a common, there's a common core of facts from which there may be different diagnoses,
right.
Is what you're saying, right? Now, there is a problem if they're inextricably intertwined, as I see it, if we were to find that. Because if we find it's inextricably intertwined, if we use that label for what I think its technical meaning is, then what we have is a decision here that the individual has no PTSD, and you're asking us to find that that's inextricably intertwined with other pendant claims. But under Harris, if we find it inextricably intertwined, we lose jurisdiction. We have to dismiss. We can't remand.
Well, Your Honor, and in that case, under Joyce, we think this could be, although it is inextricably intertwined, what we see is that this could also be still a separable claim for jurisdiction issues where the PTSD claim can be remanded. And the reason why it's so inextricably intertwined is factually we have several different diagnoses, and remanding the PTSD claim,
but,
as we said, for the
I understand you have several different diagnoses, but I'm trying to make the distinction, at least from what I think. And you tell me if my recollection of the law is wrong. But my understanding, and the term inextricably intertwined has a technical meaning in our case law. And the reason it's important is because of Harris. It's because Harris, I think, dictates to us what we must do with a case when we find out that it's inextricably intertwined with cases that are pending before the secretary. But my understanding of inextricably intertwined is that a decision on the case that is currently pending before the secretary will somehow have an impact on a case that we have here. The classic example is TDIU. You have a, let's say a person has a 40% disability for rating for something that's on appeal down here at the secretary and has been denied TDIU. You would say that those two are inextricably intertwined because if he gets a higher, if the individual gets a higher rating down here, let's say he gets a 70% rating, then that feeds right into the qualifications for TDIU. So there's a direct impact from one claim to the other. Here, I understand there are different diagnoses, but I don't know, I don't see any facts that tell me that you have that linking that I just described to you. And so, therefore, I don't see the inextricably intertwined here. And now, you can you educate me where I'm wrong?
Well, Your Honor, I don't know if I'm going to tell you that you're wrong, but I will say that just from the facts, we believe that even if we remanded on the independent basis for the PTSD, that that would work to we wanted to remand to get a VA examination addressing this. And we feel that regardless that that will develop a potentially anxiety claim or psychiatric disorder claim or whatever diagnosis falls underneath
You wouldn't have any objection then if somehow these words inextricably intertwined were deleted from this. It was not a basis for our decision, I guess. Is that correct?
Well,
they aren't. Are those words essential to the secretary's under the secretary's bargain here?
May I take a moment, really
sure.
quickly, Your Honor?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Can you imagine if this were the, you guys keep talking, can you imagine if this were the case we did in front of the audience at law school? I don't think anyone would understand it.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Thank you very much. First, to answer Your Honor's questions, going back to address the TDIU issue and how it's inextricably intertwined, that's a case where it's a legally inextricably intertwined, where this is factually inextricably intertwined, which is what our position is. And we know that the veteran deserves an adjudication in the least of his PTSD claims, which a VA examination will facilitate that, of course, and possibly he deserves an adjudication of the anxiety claim. As to Your Honor's second question about
let me put it this way, is this material to your agreement? Those words in extension.
No, Your Honor, we would not have an issue with that being removed.
Okay.
In addressing this court cites in the court order, Jarrell, King, and DiCarlo, Jarrell's holding was that although a claimant may file an NOD as to a claim adjudicated below, nothing in an NOD could confer jurisdiction upon the board over a claim that was never presented to adjudicated by the RO. In this case, the NOD did not indicate that there was an anxiety or overall psychiatric disorder, but just a claim for PTSD. But still, we acknowledge that it was reasonably raised before the RO and the board, and there was just an error in not adjudicating an anxiety or otherwise psychiatric disorder. Likewise in King, their finding was that the board did not determine whether appellant had a current medical condition that may be in need of treatment. And this was relating to that finding had to come first in order to determine whether the veteran needed the treatment in the first place. In terms of our case, the board noted that the anxiety The board did note the anxiety diagnosis and the reasons or basis in the board decision. However, it did not adjudicate the claim. It was just noting it as evidence that there was a lack of a PTSD diagnosis. Finally, in DiCarlo, we find that the holding was that res judicata requires that there be only one valid decision on any adjudicated issue or claim. And when the claim decided and no appeal is filed within the time, then the case is final. Again, we see that there was no such, the claim that was reasonably raised was not taken through the adjudicatory process. However, in DiCarlo, it did have some means that the veteran, the appellant, could press his claim for a non-adjudicated claim, press his claim with the RO in terms of getting a decision issued, and then he has certain appellate rights to that.
Counselor,
I'm sorry. No, you go ahead.
The case you haven't talked about is Ingram.
All right.
So I, as a veteran, come in and say, I don't know if it's PTSD, I don't know what the deal is, but I'm having flashbacks and mm-hmm. real problems mentally. I want benefits, period. Shouldn't that be enough?
Well, Your Honor, it seems that in Ingram, there was a case where it needed to be either an implicit denial of a claim in order for a veteran to kind of get those rights, the appellate rights, or an explicit denial of the claim. Here in the board decision, there was no recognition of the anxiety claim aside from mentioning the evidence of record and the reasons or bases. So in terms of Ingram, we feel like although this was a reasonably raised claim, there was no implicit or explicit denial for the veteran, implicit denial of the substance of an anxiety or psychiatric disorder for the veteran to even have his appellate rights for this particular claim.
And that's why we're all here today, I think.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is to try to, once again, as I think Judge Castle was very artfully stated, I think the Boggs decision needs to be viewed in context, which is post-adjudicatory and not necessarily uniformly applied on the front end of this thing. That is to say, the veteran's reasonable expectation that I meet a claim for mental disorder, and I might put PTSD on my form, but I don't know that self-diagnosis ought to guide the VA in terms of processing claims.
Right, Your Honor, and that's where the Secretary acknowledges that there was an issue where a reasonably raised claim of the anxiety claim, given that veterans cannot self-diagnose, that should have been picked up by VA and adjudicated accordingly. And in the end, the veteran does deserve an adjudication, a decision on his anxiety claim.
Maybe I'm mishearing here, but I detect a slight change in your position. As I understood your position originally was that the veteran filed a claim for PTSD, and that's a separate claim. And the evidence raised the possibility of other separate claims, anxiety disorder, maybe schizoid or schizophrenia or some schizoid disorder.
Yes, sir.
Now, that seems to me a little different than what you just said in response to Judge Lance's question, where you said that the veteran comes in and says PTSD, it really is more of a broad statement that they have a mental disorder. Can you clarify what your position is, or so I can understand it?
Yes, Your Honor. Our position is still that they are two separate claims, but that although the veteran, we understand that when a veteran comes in and says specifically, I have a diagnosis of PTSD, unless there is a private medical examiner or some other medical documentation, that we're not necessarily, what we generally do is look at the evidence.
Okay, now go ahead.
I'm sorry,
I interrupted you.
In this case, we have a reasonably raised separate claim of anxiety, and I'm sorry if I caused any confusion, but it was just what we're saying is that it was reasonably raised. The separate claim was reasonably raised, and that's what happens when even if a veteran comes in and says he has one thing, the evidence is what we look at, mm-hmm. and that didn't happen in this case. So I apologize for any confusion. Okay. I caused.
Then let me ask you then, you're given the description, the discussion about Boggs here. Is the Secretary's the position that you're espousing now, is that, do you believe that that's reinforced by Boggs, or do you believe that there's another interpretation of Boggs that would allow your view of these are separate claims to coincide with another view of Boggs, which I think that Judge Castle and Judge Lance have talked about here? And I can be more specific if you don't understand that.
Our belief is that the Boggs reinforces this view of the two separate claims.
Right? Okay, well, is there, do you find any distinction in the fact that Boggs dealt with a claim to reopen? And let me, again, talk about my recollection of Boggs. Boggs based on its view of 7104. So in other words, a veteran comes in and he has, forget what it was in Boggs, but he has X disability. And there's a hearing disability.
Yes.
And he comes in, he goes all the way through the adjudicative process and it's final. So now, a couple years later, still has the hearing problem. And he comes in and says, hey, I still got this hearing problem, but now I got a diagnosis that it's hearing problem number two. There were two different types of hearing problems. I can't remember which. Our court said, hey, hearing problem's a hearing problem. Sorry. And Federal Circuit says, no. And we said that because 7104 says you can't re-adjudicate the claim based on the same facts. And he had a hearing problem. Now he's got a hearing problem. No different facts. Federal Circuit says, no. He's got a new diagnosis, so 7104 doesn't apply. In other words, I think impliedly saying not the same facts, so it's a claim to reopen under 5108. But you see that analysis is done saying why 7104 doesn't apply. At the beginning of the claims process, we don't have a bar under 7104. You see, there's not a re-adjudication. So couldn't we say that Boggs really applies in that unique situation where there's a final claim and you're seeking to reopen because there's now some clarity brought to what actually has been adjudicated, whereas here there's no clarity. Do you see that distinction, and what do you think of it, if you do see it?
Your Honor, I understand what you're saying in terms of putting this in the context of a new material claim, but in this case, we still think it's instructive about the distinctive diagnosis, of course, and what we point to is the evidence of record. Even though there's, in the Boggs case, it was a conductive hearing loss versus sensorineural hearing loss, and that was after development, we do have evidence of record that is confusing that needed to be sorted out, but we know that there's a PTSD features floating around, anxiety, and a schizoid personality disorder. And we think that Boggs is still instructive and still confirms our position that there are two separate claims, even though it might not have had the all the adjudication that happens with a 5108 claim.
Then let me ask you this question. You're willing, or the Secretary's position, it seems to me, is willing to assume that the veteran has the capability of enunciating a clear diagnosis of a disability. Because if he comes in and says, I have PTSD, the Secretary's going to adjudicate this case as a PTSD case only. And I can understand for administrative reasons why that makes sense. But at the end of the process, when we see a BVA decision, we see if a veteran says, hey, my knee came because of X. You say, wait a minute, you can't say that because you don't have the expertise to say that under Espiritu. So how can you bind the veteran at the beginning of the process and then seek to unravel him, so to speak, at the end of the process? That seems inconsistent to me, because it seems to me the Secretary is actually treating the beginning of the process and the end of the process differently, as I hypothesize that Boggs might be doing.
Your Honor, may I please take a moment to confer with co-counsel? Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. To answer Your Honor's question, what we believe is that the language in Boggs would suggest that we would have at least a minimum duty to adjudicate the PTSD claim, not to say that we're binding the veteran. That's where the reasonably raised claim comes into play here. We are not by any means binding the veteran. The evidence of record on its face, it was reasonably raised, and that was something the RO should have adjudicated, not necessarily binding the veteran to say the veteran stated he had PTSD and that's the only thing we're going to look at. That was the error in this case.
It was a starting point then, because there was nothing else in the record. If there's nothing else in the record and the veteran says PTSD, that's a starting point.
Yes, Your Honor.
And then if evidence is developed by way of a CMP exam or something else that uncovers other things, then that would broaden the claim at that point.
It
if
could.
It's reasonably raised.
Yes,
if the evidence is reasonably raised, it's something else.
Okay, yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
I'm out of town, but I'd like to add 2 minutes if we could. I just want to get this straight in my mind. If you file the claim for VA benefits, disability compensation, related to your foot, and you went in for a comprehensive examination, as a lot of people do, and they found something wrong with your arm or head, would that be considered a claim, given what you just said, because the evidence somehow now raised it?
Your Honor, if that was something that could be related to service connection and the evidence suggested that if there was something wrong, as Your Honor said, with the head or foot, that would be a reasonably raised claim, possibly, if it related back to service.
And the veteran doesn't have to file for the benefits associated with the entirely different part of the body?
Well, Your Honor, again, if it's related to service and that's what the evidence shows us, and the veteran... We're not, again, as I stated before, we're not going to bind the veteran necessarily to...
But I think what Judge Castle is getting at is in order to file a claim, there's a definition, right? You have to show express, and I think your brief...
Yes, Your Honor.
...emphasized that quite a lot.
Yes, Your Honor.
That there has to be an intent to file. So if... Is that...
That's what I'm getting at. How broad... I mean, in other words, it's one thing to say that when somebody files for PTSD and they're not a doctor and you can't attribute the diagnosis to them, that that's a claim for a mental disability. As you examine him in the process, you find out that they also have problems with their knee and their stomach. Does that all of a sudden become a claim because the evidence raises it?
Well, Your Honor...
A claim that you will process without somebody formally filing it?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Well, we would actually like to reserve our position on that. Are there any additional questions?
I think we've got as far as we're going to go.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I will be very brief unless you have any questions for me. I simply wanted to state that we agree with the Secretary's position that if you do not feel you can grant the JMR as it stands, we would prefer to have it back so that with the guidance you would care to offer so that we can redo the JMR to be appropriate. And secondly, on this inextricably intertwined, I don't think the intention was to use it as a legal term of art, but more to say that this was all tangled up with itself. And we also would have no objection to removing those words from it. So.
Does that conclude your statement?
Sure, but I'd be glad to answer any questions if you have them.
Well, I'd just like to point out to practitioners that, you know, generally speaking, the practice is to submit the JMR and say, I don't have to do oral argument on whatever day. Hopefully, we've all learned something from this experience today.
Thank you very much. The case will be submitted.
All rise. Court is adjourned through the order.